Ask the Expert on The Pat Kenny Show.
With Hidden Hearing. Personalised care with Hidden Hearing. Visit hiddenhearing.ie.
Now, financially preparing for death can be made easier than you think. There are 7 steps you should take to financially prepare for death so you don't leave your family and loved ones with a big inheritance tax bill. Leah McMahon is financial planner for Castle Capital and she's with me now in studio to tell me more. Good morning, Leah.
Good morning, Pat.
And you're happy to answer questions as well.
Yes, I am.
Now, what are the 7 steps?
So the first one is to create or update your estate plan. So basically, estate planning is ensuring that your property, you know, your cash assets, who they go to. So I suppose the first part is looking at, have you made a will? And this is probably something that I come across a lot where I get yes and no. And there's a variety of ages as well. You know, it's not generally the people that are younger don't have a will. It can be kind of, those closer to retirement.
But even younger people should be aware that once they have an asset like a house, whatever, they should make sure they're clear where it's going or what's going to happen.
Absolutely. Like even in the context of, you know, not having a dependent, but I suppose it's you're giving yourself the choice of if something was to happen to me, this is who I'd like this asset, whether it is a car or whether it is cash, you get the choice through a will to say this is who it goes to.
Okay, so that's number one, sort out your estate, as it were.
Yes, and another one as well in terms of, I suppose, your estate is your enduring power of attorney. So in the instance that you become incapacitated mentally, it's nominating someone that you trust to be able to say, look, I trust this person to be able to make decisions on my behalf.
Now, normally we think of that in terms of someone who might have dementia or a catastrophic stroke or whatever it might be. But even younger people, there can be a road accident, a traffic accident, there can be something that renders them incapable of articulating their wishes.
Absolutely. And in the case of, I suppose, it's better to pre-plan for these things because like that, you don't know when an event like that will happen. And it's, I suppose, during a difficult time, it's a lengthy process then trying to get a ward of a court to kind of get in to be able to make those decisions for that person.
Now, documentation, you know, the missing will in the first place, the document itself, and indeed any titles to any assets.
Yes. So I suppose the second tip is looking at your organising your key documents. So that is the deeds to your property, obviously your will, your life insurance, who that's with, even bank statements, you know, in terms of how many bank accounts. Because nowadays, I suppose people have a lot of different bank accounts. There's a lot of different banking institutions that it can be very hard to find where everything is. So having either an electronic folder or, you know, even just having like a physical folder, whether it's with your solicitor, it's at home in a safe.
Okay, but you have an electronic folder and no one has your password.
Exactly, yes. And it's been very savvy in terms of, you know, maybe a trusted person in terms of, you know, that password. But yes, not very easy to find anyway.
Now, beneficiaries, I mean, it may be that when you made the document up in your 40s, that you had certain friends and certain charities or whatever that you were going to leave something to. And you've forgotten all about the thing. And then you look back and say, God, I wouldn't give them a penny.
Exactly. So life does change as well, obviously. You know, the younger you are when you do, I suppose, put things in place, even in terms of when you join a company, if there's a death and service benefit, there is a letter of wishes. So if you think, you know, if you're in your early 20s, even early 30s, and you haven't had kids or you haven't gotten married yet, you might put down in the letter of wishes that, you know, it's to go to your parents or it's to go to a sibling. But obviously, as life changes, then, you know, you meet your significant other, you have kids. They do take priority then in the sense of, now in terms of your letter of wishes, there is still that line where, you know, it won't go to your sister over your child. But it is important to know that if there's something being left behind, who is it being left behind? And obviously, when it comes to beneficiaries, then it's the different thresholds. So your CAT, A, B and C, obviously, the start of this year, they did go up. So it's 400,000, say, for threshold A, which would be, you know, from parent to child. Yeah. Threshold B then would be your 40,000, which is your nieces, your nephews, grandparents, and then your threshold C would be, I suppose, technically would be your partner if you're not married as well, and that's only 20,000. So it's looking at, you know, where what you're leaving behind and where does that fall in terms of
and
the monetary.
Your whole objective is to deprive the tax man of as much as possible.
So in terms of, we should never pay more tax than we have to. Obviously, we have an obligation to pay some level of tax because of obviously where tax goes in terms of our infrastructure and obviously healthcare and everything like that. But we shouldn't be overpaying on it. So having strategies in place to reduce kind of an unnecessary tax bill is what I would say.
Now, insurance policies, I mean, people who have a mortgage generally are bound to have a mortgage protection policy. And they may assume, because they're paying this, that it'll go on forever. It may die once the mortgage is paid off.
Exactly.
And then there is no insurance policy.
No. So in terms of the your kind of standard mortgage protection policy, generally, in a lot of cases, it's a decreasing level of cover. So what that is done, it's, you know, it's needed by the bank to say that if either, if it's yourself or it's you and a partner that buy a house, if one of you passes away, the bank gets basically gets repaid the loan. But it's generally only to cover off that liability, that debt liability. So when you're looking at family cover, you're looking at kind of your kind of general term assurance. Now, with general term assurance, like you can be insured with, you know, there's a good few insurance that will insure you up to age 90 as well, where you're kind of looking at, I suppose, when the life expectancy age is 83, 84. It is, you know, I suppose it's a good enough term.
Now, are pensions tricky?
In terms of where, I suppose...
Like, where does the pension go?
Pre and post-retirement.
Saved all this money, yes, gone into a pension fund, and then they prematurely just snuff it after maybe a year of the pension becoming active. Who gets the money?
So there are two types of pensions running at the moment. So we have the defined benefit, which majority, you would see that in the public sector. And then you'd have the defined contribution, which would be majority in the private sector. So with the defined benefit, generally there's a rule in there which would leave, you know, spouses probably 50% of the benefit with the defined contribution. So I suppose it kind of depends whether you pass before retirement or after retirement. So whether you've opened the pension or not, a PRSA, which would be kind of common for people that may not be in a company scheme, the PRSA would post or pre-retirement would pay out fully to the estate. Post-retirement, then you would be looking at who it's going to.
But so, you know, if someone has a pot of money, yep, in their pension fund, there was a time people used to buy an annuity.
Exactly, yeah.
And then if they snuffed it the next day, they lost everything.
So we are seeing a move from the annuity. I suppose in terms of the interest rates themselves and what determines the annuity that you get, you do have to weigh up the value of, you know, if you're giving 100,000 lump sum and you're getting 4% per year, you know, that's 4,000 euros a year. You're kind of hoping that you live that 25 years. So I am seeing a kind of a move towards the approved retirement fund, which is, I suppose, kind of like a flexible retirement bank account where there's ownership in the sense that, you know, an ARF can pass to a spouse tax-free. The money that is drawn out of the approved retirement fund or the ARF is subject to income tax, depending, yeah, obviously, on your tax positions. But in terms of securing that capital, we are seeing a move towards, I suppose, the ARF, the approved retirement fund.
Question here. If I have a pension set up, can I nominate someone to benefit from my pension should I pass? I presume that is the ARF rather than the annuity. You can't say to the company that's supplying the annuity, I want it to go to Joe. You can't
exactly
do that.
Your annuity, you can generally, you can do a kind of a guaranteed period. So it's generally, it's guaranteed for the first 5 years to pay out. And then there's a benefit where you can have 50% of the annuity will pay out to your spouse. If you can nominate, like in terms of your defined contribution, so your, say your company pension scheme where you're making a contribution, your employer might be making a contribution, you can nominate someone to say, whether it's, you know, whether it's a friend or a sister, there will be obviously inheritance tax, yeah, there, depending.
But the point is that you can protect that annuity from going to zero. I mean, you can actually say, I want the one way or the other, I want 5 years paid out to a designated person.
Generally, it is the spouse.
And if there's no spouse?
So it kind of depends on the situation. It depends on proving the financial dependent. So it depends on how, you know, it's not in the case of a spouse and a child. If you can prove that someone is financially dependent.
It's a rip-off, isn't it? It is a rip-off.
In terms of value for money, I suppose there's loads of different options. I suppose advice-wise, I don't see a lot of people taking up annuities at the moment.
Now, this question, my dad died last year. He had no will, but everything went obviously to his wife. My mam died this year. She had a will. Mm-hmm. Where do I stand?
So in terms of, I suppose the first thing is to meet with the solicitor to see what your mum had said in the will. Generally, depending on what the will says, like you can have some right, you know, if you're not included in the will, you can, I suppose, plead with the court in terms of, you know, the relationship there. But it kind of depends on what the will says. Like it, you would assume it's going to be left between you and siblings if there is.
This one here. My parents left their deeds with the solicitor, and when my father died, he said there was no need for deeds anymore. It's all online. He says he has no idea if they have them anymore. Is this right? All deeds being online.
I know obviously a lot of stuff has gone electronically. Like there should be a hard copy. I would be going to the solicitor to say, look, if there is a digital copy available, you know, I want it printed out and sent to me. And like that, you can store it yourself. But I suppose we are moving to a paperless world. It wouldn't surprise me if they have, but if you look back, there had to, yeah. probably when it was done, there
and
had to be a paper
course,
version.
You might have made a will with a solicitor back in the day,
yep.
and the solicitor has gone to his reward or her reward, and the office is closed. What then?
And that is because I know in terms of kind of business partnership agreements, I had something recently where the solicitor just doesn't have it anymore, and it can be a case of okay, if there isn't one there and you can't nail it down, then you need to get a new one done.
Does a will override beneficiaries who are listed with a company pension? That's from Paul.
Does a will override?
Do you know so the designation of where the pension should go is written in the company, but then someone makes a will to say the contrary?
So your will, so in terms of the trustees, so the trustees will look at the letter of wishes, and the letter of wishes isn't a legal document. The trustees are supposed to kind of give consideration to it, whereas your will, I believe, is a more kind of concrete. Right.
We have to leave it there. Leah McMahon, a financial planner for Castle Capital. Leah, thank you very much for joining us.
Ask the expert on the Pat Kenny Show.
With Hidden Hearing. Personalised care with Hidden Hearing. Visit hiddenhearing.ie.